I need to tell you that this Out of the Box program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the following underwriters.
Allahale Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic, acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, electromagnetic cellular therapy, and spinal rehab. Most major health insurance plans and Medicare accepted. Open Monday through Friday, 332-5580 or online at kalahaochiropractic.com.
HawaiiGaga.com, Hawaii Vacation Rental Directory and Vacation Guide. A proud sponsor of Kauai Community Radio, Hawaii Gaga also publishes the Kauai GPS Tour Guide, an audio tour of Kauai for iPhones. More information online at HawaiiGaga.com.
Nancy Gardner will be back on Kauai offering thermography, breast, and full body screenings on Friday, April 4th from 9 to 5. Thermography is an accurate screening alternative that uses no radiation or compression. Nancy Gardner is board certified as a technician of medical thermology at Auburn University. More information online at healthybreasts.info. You can schedule an appointment for April 4th by calling 866-766-2468. That's 866-766-2468.
It's that time again. The Kauai North Shore Lions Club will be having its annual Pancakes and Hula Breakfast on Sunday, April 13th at Honley Elementary School from 7 a.m. until 11 a.m. Takeouts will also be available. In addition to great pancakes, there will be hula and live entertainment as well as lucky number drawings and a silent auction. Tickets on sale at the Princeville Foodland from Wednesday, April 9th through Saturday, April 12th. Tickets also available at the door. This is a major fundraiser for the North Shore Lions. Proceeds are used for worthy causes, including scholarships for North Shore students and residents and publicly available vision and hearing testing.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
That's right.
Yeah, thank you, Don. That's really important that you say that because that way I know that Dave is speaking from Dave's heart and he's responsible for what he says.
That's right. This station is not. Okay, well, let's see. It's April 3rd.
No.
2013.
No, it's 4.
Today's the 4th?
Yeah.
Ooh, I say 3rd on mic watch here.
Yeah,
it's the 4th. 4:04. You're thinking of the time. No, it's April 3rd. But
really?
Yeah.
This early in the show and I'm already wrong?
You got an extra day.
Wow.
Okay, well, let's see. We got a great show lined up for you today. We've got a guest in the studio here. Jonathan, you want to talk about our guest here?
What
we got coming up?
Our guest name is Luke Eslin, and we're going to be talking with him in a couple minutes after we do some announcements and stuff. But why don't you lean into the mic and say hello?
Hello. Thank you guys for having me.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's Luke. We'll be getting back to him. We're going to talk about three things, and that should be pretty interesting. I wanted to thank you for tuning in and listening right now. It's awesome. And thanks also to the staff and the volunteers and everybody. It wouldn't be community radio without you. So thanks for that. And I wanted to also mention that we've got the silent drive in progress right now, and we'll be coming up on the pledge or membership drive in a couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that and get ready, too, because we're going to be calling on you for your support. I also wanted to ask listeners for feedback to the show. We're always trying to look for new stories, new ideas, and we want to do kinds of shows that you like. We want to steer away from shows that don't have much value. So please contact us at Out of the Box. That's OOTB for Out of the Box, OOTB at KKCR.org. We're always looking for more people to come in and join the Community Affairs team. And so if you like what you hear, come on in and join us. And if you don't like what you hear, come on in and join us, and we'll help you help us evolve the show. Got a couple announcements. You got any announcements, Dave?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll do a couple now and maybe a couple later in the show. So we'll mix it up. There is RIMPAC. RIMPAC is coming later in the summer. You know
All
what
right.
that, you know what that is.
Shoot 'em up.
Yeah, it's like the 4th of July, only with bigger explosions. It's where the big boys play with their big toys. I think they invite friends from all over the world to help blow stuff up, too, if I'm not mistaken. But there's going to be a community meeting on that for folks on Kauai, how they can participate or get involved and give their feedback on what they think of RIMPAC. That's going to be Wednesday, April 16th at 6 p.m. in the Kapa'a Neighborhood Center. For more information, you can contact 337-9977. So that's one thing. Also, coming up is Earth Day, and that's going to be a big event at KCC, Kauai Community College, April 21st. I have an extra day to get ready for that now.
That's right.
Yeah, that's exciting. And if you're interested in that, you want to contact Leona Thompson, and her email address is leona.thompson@gmail.com. That's L-E-E-O-N-A dot Thompson with a silent H, T-H-O. M-P-S-O-N, leona.thompson@gmail.com. So we got a couple other announcements that we'll give later in the show, but I wanted to get right into the interview we're going to do today, and it's the concept for this is three things. One, two, three things. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world, and there's a lot of things going on in Kauai, and everybody has a different vision of what matters most. Of what's really important to get right and what's important to not get wrong, you know, to be sure we don't do this. But everybody's coming from a different place in their life, and everybody has different life experiences. So I'm going to be doing a series of interviews over the next several months or whatever, asking different people to come into the studio and share what they think are three things that are really important for Kauai and that we can do something about. And it's an opportunity for you, the listener, to hear what other people have to say and also get involved in trying to come up with concrete solutions or steps that we can take that might be able to address some of these three things. So there should be lots of that, and we'll see how that goes. With us in the studio today is Luke Evelyn, who said hello earlier. Maybe say hello again.
Hello again.
Yeah. Is Luke, let's see. Born and raised on Kauai, born in Wilcox Hospital, went to Island School and Kauai High. Then you went to California for a couple of years, Claremont McKenna College, a liberal arts college. Tell us about that.
I was in California for 2 years, focusing in government. But I paddle outrigger canoe, which I think he was probably getting to on the bio, and I was. In California, paddling a lot. I'd paddle in circles in this little reservoir.
Oh, wow.
Every day for hours, thinking of Hawaii. We were in the Inland Empire. So anyway, I ended up leaving California after 2 years to come home and paddle, basically.
Paddle some warmer waters.
Yeah.
What made you leave to go to California? Why'd you choose that?
It was a good college, and I wanted to go to the mainland and experience the mainland. And actually, part of the impetus of coming home was that me and two of my high school friends had this dream of starting a canoe building company.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it forever through high school, and it sort of was coming to fruition midway through college. So I ended up coming home to finish out at UH and start that company while I was still in school.
Okay, so then you were on Oahu for like 5 years.
Yeah.
And working the canoe company.
Yeah.
And then something happened to you. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that, because I think that's kind of a big deal.
I was on Oahu for, I think, 6 years. On October 10th, 2010, I was doing the Molokai Hoi, which is the canoe race from Molokai to Oahu, and ended up getting run over by our motorboat, our escort boat, which did a lot of damage. So
to you?
To me, yeah. Not much to the boat.
Not much to the boat.
I went to battle against a prop, and the prop won. And that was sort of this transformative moment in my life. One, because it brought me back home to Kauai. I couldn't walk for a while. So I was here recovering, living back at home with my parents when my business was on Oahu. And, and sort of two is that it... for me, it's sort of corny, but I really feel like it, it showed me sort of that I was mortal, and it showed me that you know, I feel like from that moment on, I guess my view of the world is very different, that we live on sort of this mortal planet. And you know, in a flash, everything can change.
So I give up. What's corny about that? That seems like a profound spiritual insight.
Well, but everybody claims that they have a spiritual insight when they have something like this happen. So, you know.
Well, there's nothing like, you know, losing your spirit to or looking at, facing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't seem corny to me.
Yeah.
So that was how many years ago?
That was 4 years ago, 2010.
4 years ago. So now here we are, 2014. You're back in Kauai. You're living off the land. You're off the grid. And how are you spending your time now? What are you doing with your energy on a day-to-day basis?
We live off the grid, and I'm managing some aspects of my business, or whatever I can do basically remotely from here. I have a partner on Oahu who manages production, because we basically build outrigger canoes in Kailua on Oahu, and I do customer service and finance for that. So most, all of my time basically is spent doing that out of my house. But I also coach outrigger canoeing, which I'll have to leave here a little bit early today to get to practice on time, but I coach at Pu'uvai Canoe Club on the Wailua River. That's pretty much it.
That's pretty much it. You're just paddling around now.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I invited you to come into the studio today because I thought I introduced to you, got ran into you, bumped into you on a funny
way. You
didn't
run him over, did you?
No, no.
Okay.
No, we were both on the bus, as a matter of fact. We were taking the bus, and a funny thing happened to me on the way to KIUC. I bumped into Luke. So we had a chance to talk and get acquainted a little bit. And then, I suppose the details of the story don't matter so much. But I was intrigued by some of the things you had to say, because we started talking immediately about energy policy. And we found we agreed on a lot of things, but not everything. And that's, to me, that's some of the most valuable conversations that I can have anyway, is when you start sharing your perspective with somebody else, and they don't have the same conclusions. So that's interesting to me, because it's not really so much about right and wrong. It's about sharing and learning. So I had this idea to do the three things show, and I thought, well, you know what? I bet you Luke's got a couple things he's interested in. And so what are the three things that you're going to share with us today?
The three things basically are energy independence, food security, and reducing inequality, you know, as the three major things facing Kauai, you know. And I think sort of as an introduction to that, I think that, you know, on Kauai, obviously sustainability is the biggest issue we're facing. You know, how do we live with the resources that we have here? You know, and on Kauai, we have this perfect sort of microcosm of the planet, and then we have this, you know, defined landmass, the most isolated landmass in the world, in the middle of the Pacific, and we have all the resources that we need here to survive. You know, and the good thing for us is that we know it's possible. You know, the Hawaiians did it for
a thousand years.
Yeah, long before, you know, any of us were here. So, you know, we know it's possible, and I feel like we need to work in that direction. You know, and you know, so that's the goal, and that's what those three things are leading towards. You know, and I think we're so far from that right now, you know, as an island and as a country. You know, we have this sort of GDP-driven mentality.
Gee, that's a grotesque domestic product.
Yeah, basically, you know, that we measure our progress based on, you know, expanding our economy.
Which is not the living world we live in, but a fictitious world of numbers that represent stuff.
No, yeah, exactly. So, you know, we have growth as our baseline marker of improvement. Yet, even with all of this growth, you know, right now as a nation, we have the highest levels of inequality of any advanced nation in the world.
We're number one.
we have the least opportunity for advancement. You know, so we're sort of, you know, it's not working, this system that we have. You know, as we sort of move out of our, you know, recession that we've been in for the last 6 years, you know, our supposed recovery isn't being, all of our gains are really going to those on the top of the food chain. You know,
so what's wrong with that?
Well,
how is that not helpful?
Our,
maybe it's not helpful to look at it in terms of right and wrong. What are the the advantages of that and what are some of the disadvantages of that?
Well, I wouldn't say there's many advantages. I mean, so there...
Well, you're just not in the 1% then.
Yeah. There's a definite advantage for those at the top, the 1%. But, you know, our middle class is shrinking for the first time in recorded U.S. history, right? The middle class is getting smaller. Income is stagnating. So literally the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer under this system. You know, and I'm not saying that growth in itself is a bad thing. I'm just saying right now...
Really?
It's obvious... I think we can have smart growth.
Smart growth,
yeah,
really?
I mean, we our population is inevitably going to grow on this island. We just have to deal with that in an.
But the island's not going to grow.
You're right. Yeah, that's why we got to do it intelligently.
Hmm.
I just use those. You know, I don't want to talk too much about things out of our control, like, you know, but that's, you know, it's a sort of a marker of that this system doesn't work for us. You know, so as far as like Kauai goes, in my 29 years here, minus being in California and Oahu. You know, every year I feel like the quality of life for us is diminishing. You know, there's more traffic, there's more people on the beaches, there's more resorts, more development, you know, and increased inequality, you know, and we're losing access to, you know, the treasures of our island, like Kipu Falls, Opaikaua Falls, Papaa Bay,
Kilauea Falls.
Kilauea Falls is a really good one, coastal Alaloa here in the North Shore.
Hunting up in the mountains.
Yeah, access to Mauka and Makai.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and every year, you know, there's we're losing access to one more place. You know, and this is just because of this growth model. So it really impacts us here. You know, and I think, you know, even more so, sort of all of this growth is done on the back of the environment. You know, so the things that we're seeing, you know, climate change, loss of biodiversity, ocean acidification, fisheries collapse, massive resource depletion. You know, these are things that are going to hit us hard here. And we just need to deal with it and be able to adapt and mitigate, you know, so
we're going to challenge the idea that growth can go on forever in a finite world.
Yes.
And not only a finite world, but a finite Kauai.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've got a tiny island, 553 square miles, I think. It's not going to get any bigger. We've got carrying capacity issues. And so we're going to take a look at growth and the philosophical undergirdment of growth. But you broke it into three categories, energy, food, and inequality. I think the inequality might be the hardest one to tackle. So let's start with energy. Why did you pick these? And why did you pick these three, and why did you pick energy?
Well, so I think energy, obviously, is... I mean, I sort of started with easy to solve to hard to solve. You know, energy, it's pretty clear what's happening here. You know, we have this island, we have barges of fuel that come to Port Allen, and we burn, you know, diesel fuel for our energy.
We don't have any oil deposits here.
We don't
No?
Have.
No, that's unfortunate.
But we do have tons of natural renewable resources that we can use. You know, but I think... You know, the problems of being dependent on overseas fuel, one, our isolation in itself is of a problem. You know, if anything happens, we're stuck out here, you know, completely dependent on overseas.
I think Dave's brought up the killer point here, and that is that we don't have that resource here. So it's got to come in from elsewhere. And that's not very sustainable from the get-go.
Yeah.
So,
we're dependent on this fuel, this oil from the Middle East, which, you know, in the last decade alone, oil prices have gone up 400%. You know, and I think we need to just really start looking at our energy use on Kauai. You know, we don't necessarily see the environmental degradation here. You know, we flip a switch, you know, and at the same time, we're flipping that light switch when we come home at night, you know, and there's a mountain in Appalachia getting blown up for coal, you know, even though we don't use coal here, it's used in Hawaii. You know, there's
rainforests in Indonesia, which are getting raked.
Yeah.
And, you know, fried.
But all the products that we buy from other places uses those energy sources. So we are on the hook for them as well.
Yeah,
that's true. All our inexpensive manufacturing goods in China, that's all coal.
Yeah. And fracking and, you know, our war in the Middle East for oil and, you know, drilling in the Arctic refuge and oil spills in the, you know, Gulf Coast of Mexico. I feel like, you know, we just have to take responsibility for all of this that's happening with our energy use here.
That seems like a lot. That's kind of a big deal. And I know what some people look at that, they get depressed.
Yeah. Well, and I think even the most depressing here would be climate change, you know, and that's sort of in my mind basically the main reason we need to work for clean renewable energy on Kauai is that, you know, basically every scientific organization on the planet agrees that the climate is warming, that man is causing it, and that it's going to cause major planetary disruptions unless we change. You know, so there's sort of this increasing fervor from the scientific community saying that we need to deal with this problem, you know, and yet policymakers are ignoring it or not listening. You know, so I think...
Or they listen, but then they don't do anything in accord with the information that they're getting.
Yeah, I think I got two interesting quotes. On the same day, March 17th, 2 weeks ago, the AAAS, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, which is the nation's largest scientific organization, came out basically saying, in very strong words, that we need to do something about climate change. They're saying human-caused climate change is happening. We face risks of abrupt, unpredictable, and potentially irreversible changes.
That doesn't sound good.
And responding now will lower the risk and cost of taking action. You know, and so that's a clear message, you know, to policymakers, I think. And March 17th also happened to be, you know, the date that we had the State of the County address, you know, I think just, you know, just as a representative of the disconnect between science and policy here, you know, during that State of the County address, the mayor, you know, said that we're seeing very promising signs of true recovery here. New businesses are coming to Kauai, Taco Del Mar, Sports Authority, Pier 1, Ross, Safeway, Petco, Walgreens, Jack in the Box.
What's wrong with that?
You know, again, that's sort of just pushing this endless growth mentality, you know, like as if these stores coming, yeah, they're going to increase the bottom line for the county. You know, they're going to increase
more
tax revenue.
Sure, more consumer options.
Exactly, more consumer options. But it's been proven, one, that big box stores lead to increased poverty. You know, what happens to the locally owned store right next door? It's going to go out of business. You know, and it's just pursuing growth to solve our problems. You know, is sort of this ironic feedback loop.
Well, let's stay with energy for a little bit, and let's try and keep it on Kauai.
So, you know, I think the good news here with energy, really good news, is that KAUC is doing a lot, you know, to push us in the right direction. You know, we have
how so.
We're leading the nation basically in renewable energy production. You know, pretty soon we're going to be at 50% of our daytime energy use will be from renewable resources, you know, and that's a great accomplishment, you know, and it's something that's necessary. Yet I think with that accomplishment, it's sort of like the easy part was done already, and now we face the hard part. Now that we're leading the nation, we're fighting these hurdles that nobody else has faced before, right?
So what are our new renewable energy sources?
Well, we have, basically it's coming from expansion of photovoltaic with distributed energy on homes and KAUC-owned photovoltaic plants. You know, and I think distributed energy creates tons of opportunity and also creates a lot of problems that we, you know, as a community, I think, need to deal with. You know, Jonathan's been talking about this for a long time as, you know, promoting community dialogue and trying to deal with these issues that we're going to face. You know, and I think energy problems, you know, they're wonky, they're not exciting, and they're incredibly complex. But unless we sort of face these things head on, you know, we're not going to make progress. So
now there's also the biomass plant,
yeah,
which is going to be a significant amount of electricity coming out of that here in a couple of years.
Yeah,
yeah, the biomass, I think, is pretty groovy for two reasons. One is because it's going to be eating albizia trees,
yeah,
which, you know, is a resource that we have here that we don't really want here.
Well, but they planted those for the plant, for the... And all those trees up in Knutson Gap, that was all planted with the intention of the plant, of the biomass plant.
But the plant's going to eat them, and then
right, yeah.
So that's one thing.
They're
that's
not
good.
Cleaning up the rest of the island. They're just stuff that they had planted themselves.
It's going to be a hungry factory that they're going to need to feed. But the other thing I like about it is it creates lots of jobs because all those albizia trees need to be chopped up. So that's like chainsaw work and hauling.
Are they going to use photovoltaic?
Chainsaws
to cut them trees down, or are we going to be relying on gasoline for that?
Well, evidently, it's one step at a time. The thing that's attractive to me about that is it's lots of living wage, blue-collar jobs. If you have a solar array or solar farm, you got like one guy with a squeegee to clean them off. It's not lots of jobs there. Lots of good clean energy, but not lots of jobs.
Well, and I think the important part about the biomass plant is that it's producing sort of baseline power, you know, which is one of these
firm
wonky things that we need to start understanding is the difference between baseline power and variable power. You know, and And one of the problems that we face now as a community is how do we deal with the fact that as we expand our photovoltaic capacity, you know, the sun doesn't always shine, you know, so we're looking at, you know, and
you know, I hear people say that, and I just want to correct the misunderstanding about that, because it's not true.
It does always
shine. The sun does always shine.
On Kauai, the sun is not always
shining. Sometimes we're on the ground. We're on the sun side of the world, and sometimes we're on the night side of the world. But the sun is always shining. I hear people beat up on the sun, and I just wanted to give some props to the sun.
Yeah, the sun is always shining. But we got to deal with the fact that on Kauai, the sun is going to set. You know, and so we imagine a world where in 10 years, and this is likely going to happen, say we have 100% renewable penetration, you know, so during the daytime the sun is shining, you know, on a super bright day maybe Kauai is producing 120% of its energy needs. You know, and then the sun sets and we're back to producing 10%, you know, so how does KAUC produce an equitable rate structure to, you know, accommodate that they're gonna, are they paying people consistently the same amount, you know, even if they're not using that electricity, even if we're producing way more, or if they can produce it cheaper in their own arrays, you know, and what happens at night when all of a sudden electricity is way more valuable, you know, and there's the solution to that, you know, is demand response management, which is trying
demand response management. That sounds complicated. What is demand response management?
Basically, you know, it's just matching the demand curve with the supply curve. So if you can imagine, you know, during...
So what does that mean, supply, and what are these two kinds of curves?
So with variable power, as the sun goes through its day, we're going to, you know, have tons of electricity in the middle of the day and no electricity at night. So our supply of electricity is highly variable, right? So we need to be able to match our demand to the availability of electricity. You know, and, yeah.
So you have the production side,
yeah,
making electricity. And then you have the demand side, which is using the electricity.
Yeah.
All right, so those are the two things.
Yeah, so okay. It's basically, at the end of the day, it's incentivizing electricity when it's available and disincentivizing it when it's not, or when it's coming from, you know, oil and such.
Okay, so this is a supply side strategy.
Yes. You know, and it's, demand response management is sort of a key to every, you know, there's thousands of plans out there to get to 100% renewable. You know, every state has a plan written to get to 100% renewable, and demand response management is sort of a key catalyst for all of these, is that we need to be able to curve our demand based on our supply. You know, so I think that's just one of the conversations.
So that's a demand side solution.
It's totally a demand side solution. It's how to incentivize electricity use when it's there.
So. Okay, so we got two sides of the equation, and we're going to be working on both sides. We're going to be working on the supply side to have sustainable, green, locally available energy produced, and then we got the demand side, which we're also going to look at.
Yeah, I mean, it's just evidence that sort, you know, like that we can't just, you know, I wish that the answer was as simple as putting a photovoltaic panel on everybody's, you know, roof, but that's not, you know, we need to deal with the fact that that doesn't work. So imagine if everybody
because you just have nighttime still.
Well, and also because what if imagine Kauai is producing that 150% more power than we actually need, yet KIUC is paying out per kilowatt the same amount for that power. So they're going to end up, under the system we have now, they would go theoretically broke, paying way more for the power than we need.
Let me see if I understand you.
Yeah.
You're saying that electricity should cost different amounts at different time of the day.
Yes. That, you know, that's time of use pricing. And I think
because right now it's all flat. It's all the same price.
Yeah, yeah.
1 kilowatt equals, I don't know what, 48 cents or 42 cents or whatever it is.
Yeah. So I think that, well, the price of electricity has to change depending on the availability, and the price that KUC is paying for electricity has to be continuously changing. When there's tons of power, they need to be able to pay basically nothing for it if they don't need it. Right. Whereas right now they're paying the avoided cost of fuel, which is something like, you know, it's variable, but it's 20 cents a kilowatt hour. So that rate just needs to be able to constantly fluctuate.
That sounds like that will be very complicated to implement.
It is, you know, but it's the you know, smart meters are part of the answer. I won't say that they are the answer. But I just feel like looking at these questions are an integral part of moving forward. We have to say, here's this problem. You know, what is the answer to this problem? And where are they going to be the first in the country to really try and solve these issues? So everybody's looking to us. How does Kauai do it?
Well, are there any other places in the world that are, say, at this level in renewables? Like Germany, for example, I think they have quite a bit of renewable solar. Have they figured out how to distribute it and use it, you know, 24 hours a day when it only comes half the day? or there for a couple of hours.
Well, they have wind power too, which and that you know goes throughout the night and day. It's the winds are variable in strength, but they're not just related to the nighttime or the daytime.
Right.
Yeah, I think our situation is a little bit unique. You know, Iceland is 100% renewable, the country, you know, but it's mostly geothermal and hydro, which are real baseline. You know, so as for Kauai, you know, our main resource here is the sun. You know, we're going to need to mix in some hydro in there, but we're going to have way more PV than most places.
Yeah, I know that there's islands that are totally sustainable in Denmark as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Europeans are actually ahead of us. I mean, you know, we're doing well inside the nation of the United States, but I hate to break it to the world that the nation is not number one in the world. There's all kinds of other examples around the world that we really could learn from.
Right. I think in Europe they have been taxing the energy supplies quite heavily, and so that has incentivized people to find alternatives here. And the same thing in Kauai is happening. We have some of the highest electric rates in the country, so you know,
so we use less.
So people here, well, yeah. I don't.
Oh, no, that's true. Yeah, you take a look at the per capita usage of electricity here and compared to the mainland.
Yeah.
Significantly less here. The higher you charge something, the more people will try and avoid using
it. Well, but there's probably some other factors involved there, like no need for air conditioning so much.
Sure.
No heaters, you know.
Sure. But our electrical consumption on a per household basis on Kauai is less than on Oahu, for example.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think based on what you just said about the air conditioners, it's interesting because that really changes. You know, we're one of the few places in the country that our peak is going to be at nighttime when everybody comes home and turns on their TVs and lights instead of middle of the day when everybody on the mainland's pumping their AC. So, right. You know, whereas PV almost works better when everybody's pumping AC when you need the power during the day.
Right.
So basically, it's just trying to figure a way to shift demand when we have the power and away from when we don't have the power.
Hey, we had a question from a caller here who wanted to know about your own situation. You said you were off the grid in your house. You want to describe the type of system you have there?
I mean, we have six solar panels, which give us all the power we need, basically. And
a couple of batteries?
And a couple of batteries, yeah.
Do you ever use it up?
I mean, that's where I actually became passionate about this energy subject was that, you know, in the middle of the winter, you know, when it's shorter days or a rainy day, we lose power at night, you know, so we realize the value of power. On a sunny day, today it's beautiful at my home, you know, we got tons of power. I can turn my toaster on if I want to, which is a luxury for us, you know, so it's, you know, really it taught us the value of electricity changes.
Well, there's nothing like losing something to understand the value of it. I lived off the grid for 3 years. And I had even a tinier solar system, only four panels and just four batteries. Sometimes, you know, it just wasn't that much electricity stored up. And you turn a switch on, boom, the power dropped.
Yeah.
Time for bed.
Yeah. No, exactly. This morning we had no power. We couldn't do our laundry. You know, we had to wait for the sun to come out.
Now, I was over on Maui looking at a house a while back. And the systems they have there, a lot of houses are off the grid. Whole parts of the island don't have any electricity at all. The same in the Big Island, you know, Puna area in Kau. So, but what they do there a lot, and I haven't seen this on Kauai, is they'll have a backup generator, like just a little motor, so that, you know, if the power level goes down in your batteries, but you still need the electricity, you can kick on a generator for a couple of hours and
recharge them,
or 20 minutes or whatever it might be. I haven't seen that on too many systems around here. People might have a backup generator in case they need an emergency or anything like that.
I had one.
That was a
I had a little Honda.
Well, but that, like you say, you only had two panels, you know, and you needed that probably. But this would be an integral part of the system, you know. As soon as the power went down, you wouldn't have to flip a switch. It would kick on automatically to keep the batteries charged at a certain level.
Yeah, but the generator is noisy, and so at night, who wants to listen to that?
Well, you'd place them appropriately or enclose them. I mean, it could be done, but I mean, that would make it more palatable for a larger number of people who don't want to put up with the inconvenience but still want to be off the grid kind of thing. You know, so.
Yeah, you know, from our part, you know, I thought it was a great idea when we were going into it. I actually regret it now. You know, it's an inefficient use of resources, right? On a sunny day, the same thing when it comes back to what we were just talking about. On a super sunny day, my batteries get maxed out. I'm just wasting power, right? Power is just getting burned through my system because the batteries can't take it. I got nowhere to put it. Whereas if I was on the grid, that power would be going circling back into the grid. You know, and likewise,
you think about getting more storage?
No, because it's also, you know, from an environmental perspective, you know, just adding batteries to my system, you know, it's not really a feasible solution if I'm looking to minimize my footprint. You know, being on the grid is the best management of our electricity.
So, but you're saying that goes back to demand. You know, you're just not using it.
Yeah.
You've taken your consumption of electricity, and you're throttling that way back as well.
Oh yeah.
So that's a really key. It's a really key thing, because we can talk about all day long and all night long about different supply side solutions, but if we don't look at our demand, like what are we doing with all this power?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like, for example, using electricity to make water hot. That's like the king of ridiculous.
Yeah. No, of course, we're talking about renewable energy on Kauai. Solar water, hot water heaters are such a key aspect of that.
Yeah, you're saying that it's maybe not feasible to have PV on every rooftop, but I think that you should have solar hot water on every rooftop.
Yeah, definitely.
Would you agree?
Yeah, no, for sure. PV should be, and that's actually something that the county should be, you know, everybody's taking advantage of the loophole and getting a gas water heater variance, you know, and Kauai has way more than any other island taking advantage of that loophole. You know, there is a state mandate. You should get a solar hot water heater unless you can prove that you need a gas for whatever reason. But everybody on Kauai is having gas, gas on demand.
Well, but there's no gas deposits, no natural gas deposits
exactly.
Here on Kauai.
Yeah. So we should be, the county or the state has to eliminate the loophole that allows for the gas water heater variance, in my opinion. But you know, I think one more quick interesting thing about solar, you know, and the reason why it just doesn't work to put solar in everybody's houses, you know, is, or just a thing that we have to figure out as we move forward, is that, you know, if you imagine an island of 100 people, you know.
How about imagine an island of 65,000 people?
Well, for visualization, we'll stick with 100 and we can expand it.
Okay.
So you have 100 people on this little island and you have a traditional utility in the middle, you know, burning diesel fuel and pumping power out, you know, and then there's this great technology, which is, you know, rooftop photovoltaic, and you get some savvy salesman. You know, and every year you get 10 more people to put a rooftop system. You know, and it's a great idea. We're using now, you know, the sun to power ourselves. But what happens, you know, at night, everybody's still relying on that grid. So as we expand, say in 5 years on this island of 100 people, you have half the people have a rooftop PV system, and they're now, you know, under the current rate structure, paying zero electric bill. The responsibility for maintaining the overhead of the grid is now on a dwindling number of people.
The people who are left stuck with the grid.
Exactly. So there's 50 people, and those are inevitably the people who couldn't afford to put the PV on their homes.
But their electric prices just doubled because only half of them are paying for it now.
Exactly. So they're now paying to, you know, maintain the plant, maintain the lines, pay the salaries of the people at the utility. You know, so it's just another sort of example of there's these big fundamental problems as we sort of change our utility structure and how we're going to deal with them.
Well, let's see. We got callers calling in now who want to make some comments or questions. And let's go to the phones and see what we got.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes. Yo, what's up? Who's this?
Hey, Jacob. You got a question on energy?
Yeah, I have a question on energy. Yeah.
What's your question, Jacob? Thank you for joining us this afternoon. You're on Oahu, yeah?
Yeah. Who am I speaking with?
This is Jonathan.
Jonathan and who?
Jonathan and
Dave.
And Dave. And our host today is Luke Edlin.
Oh, Luke Edlin's with you guys?
Yeah.
Oh, what's up, Luke?
How's it going?
So what's your question on energy?
Well, I mean, how are people going to, like, save the hot water heaters? You know, how are they going to save the hot water heaters?
What do you mean, save the hot water heaters?
It's like save the whales? It's like save the whales, save the water heater.
How are they gonna like keep their water from like getting cold? You know, how are they gonna keep their hot water?
Okay, hey, let Luke answer that. Thanks
for the call.
That's
a great question. Thank you so much.
Hello.
I'm no expert in solar hot water heaters, but I know that modern solar hot water heaters are very good at maintaining hot water, you know, the insulation and whatever.
Insulate them. That's the answer.
Can have hot water late into the night. Modern hot water heaters, it's got to be raining for a couple days straight for you to run out of hot water. Or just cloudy, I mean.
I love the hot water heaters, and the love I have for them is so great because every gram of electricity that you don't use on making water hot is saved.
So it's like free.
It's
free,
like
free shower.
Well, it's like if we can get solar hot water on every roof on the island, that would free up 10 megawatts of power, and that would be like
10
putting
megas, what percentage of our electric use is that?
Like 15, wow. 15 to 20%.
Wow.
Yeah, 10 plus percent for sure. And the thing that's awesome about that is that would be the equivalent of building a hydropower dam on the Wailua River, except no dam on the Wailua River.
Okay, hey, we have another caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Aloha.
Hello.
Yes, a couple of low-tech solutions which folks might consider. Number one, how about the third world solution for generating on-demand electricity by pedaling your bike?
Oh, the Gilligan generator.
Exactly. They use it like in the PI, the Philippines, and other countries that don't have sophisticated generation systems or reliable systems. So I downloaded some plans from a guy in Palo Alto, and of course I've yet to build it.
Going to make them out of bamboo, or how are you going to build
it? No, well, the main thing is you just have a little generator and then a battery, of course, attached to your bicycle. And if you want to watch TV or whatever, you just pedal the bicycle.
Can you just take like a car alternator or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to get free downloadable plans to construct your own. Yeah, like low-tech or alternative system. And then a couple years ago, there was on the Public Access Channel, a lady posted a video such that she demonstrated how one could build either on the roof or adjacent to the roof out of a cheap, giant plastic trash can, how to make like a solar shower or a solar water heater without... See, where I live, for example, I've lived in this low-income housing project, which is quite lovely. People think it's a condo. It's so lovely maintained. But the main thing is when they renovated this place after 30 years, the owner decided not to opt for a solar panel. So that screws
me
out.
For hot water? Or
for any kind of electricity generation. So, well, thank you, owner. But see, the thing is, like, I keep my electric bill the last 2 months to $38.
Now, that's a... demand side solution. You're using very, very little electricity.
Yeah, and see what I do is like since I've been persuaded for health reasons to go vegan. So even though I'm a former chef, I have all these professional kitchen tools, etc. I hardly ever cook anything, so it saves me choke energy. So, I mean, that's the main thing is on the demand side. I'm just trying to have a low profile. And then what I do, especially when it's in the colder months, like we just got out of, my bathroom is on the front of where facing the setting sun. So I close it up and I put rugs, but where the air might come in. And so when I go in, and for years, I didn't take any hot showers at all. I mean, it was.
That's a way to save.
Yeah, well, the main thing is, you have to really steel yourself, but it is, if you look into the health reasons why it's important to take cold showers, even though, most people don't have the courage to do so, and it does take, it is a bit much, I agree, but the thing is, it's better for your health because your body releases all kinds of really incredible good chemical reactions, and it's better for your gallbladder and your kidneys, and it's better to be colder because you burn more calories, you get, you're in better shape. So I would argue for the demand side being lessened, and also for these high tech like Powaniki. I went out into the field and I found this crate, and I painted it white on the inside, and I cantilevered some aluminum foil, diagonals with a chicken wire, and then I found also in the same field a couple of pieces of refrigerator glass, and so I made my first solar oven. The only problem, of course, is you have to start early. Like 7 in the morning or so, and then by the time you come back at like 5 o'clock or whatever, your food is cooked, of course, but it takes some planning. And then number two, I called up Jack Wada. He gave me a old satellite dish, and I made my second generation of solar oven, which is, focusing the rays of the sun. And so, I figure out ways to but it does take planning, and most people in their Gucci lifestyles, heavens, they, driving their brand new SUVs and living in their million-dollar homes, they couldn't be bothered by this.
Okay, hey, let's let Luke respond to this then.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are great examples of, as Jonathan said, demand-side reductions. You know, we all just need to be aware of our own energy footprint and minimize it as much as possible. I looked into a personal, one of those bikes for myself.
A Gilligan?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of cool ones online, but the problem is, you know, you're going to be producing like 30 watts, you know, which maybe you can power your TV while you're watching the TV.
You know what I like to do is use that just to make a smoothie. Take the mechanical energy and blend them up and delicious papaya smoothies and
stuff.
You
put a smoothie right onto the axle there, or do you make electricity and run a blender?
Just push the fruit right through the gears, I think.
Oh, there you go.
Dave, you're so silly.
No, actually, I saw a blender one time that, you know, you could do by hand, a hand crank.
Sure, I have one.
You know, so you don't need to have a battery for that.
No, just.
So my question was, did you have a battery or did you have a
Just a mechanical, hook it right up to a blender.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, we have another call.
Let's see what I have to say. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Box. Our guest this afternoon is Luke Eslin. We've been talking about energy on Kauai.
Out of the breaker box, you mean?
Sure.
There we go. It's a good show, you guys. It's really, I think you're nailing it really by reduction of supply and demand. Like, it sounds so complicated, all those things. But when you break it down, there was this grid here. There was just the sun and the water. And if you wanted warm, you'd make a fire. And that's how they live for lots of years. So all this, if you have the money, then it doesn't matter because you're like, oh, I got money, I want power anytime, you know. And so that's what you're paying for. You're paying for that luxury of having hot water all the time or cooking or whatever. But yeah, it's just a matter of just not demanding so much, and you'll have less to think about.
Awesome. Did you have a question for Luke at all?
I guess my only concern about any kind of the KUC, and I'm a paying member too, but the smart meters seem like it's kind of like enough people that are really concerned with them, and they still pop up anywhere because the people that aren't concerned with them. And so then it's a grid of smart meters around people that don't, maybe some of them don't have smart meters, but then anywhere they go, everybody else has them. So as far as their range and all that kind of stuff, how much they've been studying and stuff, I don't know, it just seems kind of wild that we're, like, pushing all these things forward. It seems like, it just makes me want to turn off my power, really. But I do like the radio. I do like hot water, you know, those things too. But really, lessening your demand is going to really help a lot, you know. Just to remember that what you sacrifice can be, you know, like, it can be character building. It could actually mean that somebody else gets the hot water. I mean, it could be anything. So, but I've just seen that in my own life, reducing all the things that don't make me feel emotionally connected. And I got rid of a lot of stuff, and I feel a lot better now. So I'm thinking the energy and power, it's like that's part of the same thing, too. So to let go of the demand of that and, you know, live simply. Have a fire to cook your food and, you know, sit there with your kids and watch the fire. That's like old TV, hey?
Better than TV, yeah.
Yeah, and there's legal, they don't have the green burn ban for that, but if you got food, you got food. So, just like looking at living differently, you know, kind of old style, because there wasn't so much complication, you know. But a really great show, and it's good topics. It's good for everybody to think about. So I appreciate you guys bringing that message.
Okay.
And the host coming on, too, everything. Thank you.
All right, Laura, thanks for calling.
Well.
So we kind of been talking about energy for a little while here, and I think we're going to run out of time to talk about the other two things, food and inequality. Food, I think there's been a lot of discussion about the need to grow our own food on Kauai, and so maybe we could skip to the harder one, inequality. What do you mean by inequality, and why do you think that's important to address? Why is that a barrier to us getting to a sustainable place here?
I think, with inequality, as we sort of exacerbate these global issues, there's sort of this tragic irony in there, in that the people who are causing the biggest issue, are the big consumers, which are sort of, you know, at the higher income side. The people who are not causing the problem are at the lower income side. So, and yet the people who are affected the most from, say, climate change are going to be those at the low-income side, you know, so third world nations. So I just feel like, you know, from
but they're not the decision makers about who and how the industrial global economy goes.
Yeah, exactly. They've sort of got no say, you know, and there's islands that are being flooded. There'll be mass displacement of people who never, you know, who didn't cause the issue. So it's, in my mind, this again, tragic irony of this. And interestingly, there was just this recent study funded by the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, which used this mathematical model called HANDY, which
stands for something.
Stands for something, I do not know, and I don't know how it works. But I know they sort of quantify past drivers of civilizational collapse, and they
which is something that we want to try and avoid.
Exactly,
as I understand it.
As I understand it. So their conclusion basically, they said under current conditions, collapse is difficult to avoid unless we reduce inequality. You know that inequality.
So now why did they say that?
Well, they use inequality as a main driver for collapse. That as people become more and more disenfranchised and lose access to resources, and especially in our current model, are the ones being affected most by current global conditions. It ends up not being a sustainable solution, whether it's revolution or whatever. You know, and I'm not saying we're gonna have a revolution on Kauai, but from a global perspective, it's definitely something that we need to be very concerned about. You know, and I think from Kauai's perspective, we have the highest proportion of millionaires in the country. You know, 1 in 15 people in Hawaii is a millionaire.
Really?
Yeah. You know, and I actually just found that out today. You know, and like.
So if you're in a room with 14 other people, one of you is a millionaire.
Chances are, yeah.
Anybody a millionaire in this room?
Well, if you own property on Kauai, then chances are you're a millionaire because the value of the property here is so much. Cool.
Well, you know, and I looking at that, you know, I don't know, you know.
What about the other 14 people in the room, though?
Well, that's the thing, you know. From looking at, say, who I, you know, like went to high school with, none of us are millionaires, you know. Like, I mean, it's sort of, you know, we have a lot of very wealthy people on the island, and that's great, but we need to do something about, you know, the rest of us, you know, and you know, it's increasingly difficult to afford a home on Kauai, to support a family on Kauai, you know, and like I sort of started the whole conversation off that income inequality in this country is, you know, the middle class is shrinking, while the top 1% is expanding, you know, getting richer. So we just need to figure out a way to sort of deal with these issues, and I think that they are as important as food security and energy independence.
So are you talking about taking money away from the rich people, giving it to the poorer people?
Not at all. You know, I think most of the solutions.
Wait a second. What about taxes?
Isn't
that when we take money away from people and
it's not
redistribute it?
Yes. I mean, I think refining our tax code for sure is one thing. I think the biggest issues in helping inequality, you know, are sort of federal and state issues, healthcare, minimum wage, advanced, you know, pre-K education or more support for pre-education. You know, but I think there are things that we can do on Kauai. You know, and again, they all sort of link back to, I think, food security and energy independence, public transportation. You know, we need to increase our access to public transportation. The bus runs once an hour. It's got to be half an hour, you know.
But that's like twice as much.
Exactly.
You know, and that's going to cost twice as much or more because you need more buses to maintain the fleet around the island.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, and I think that financial constraints are obviously always the issue. You know, I really feel like expansion of the bus should be funded from an increase in the gas tax. You know, and you can have a small 2-cent increase leads to $3 a month, you know, and possibly double the routes that the bus, you know, double the times that the bus is going. You know, I think more than public transportation, from a community perspective, and this again goes back to what we would have talked about during food, which we didn't talk about, was supporting, you know, local business. You know, I think it's really, you know, we hear it all the time, support local business, but it's so,
but why? I mean, how does it matter?
I mean, so if we go, you know, and we buy, you know, 10 papayas, you know, and we, you know, can either go to the farmer's market to buy those 10 papayas, or we can go to Safeway to buy those 10 papayas. you know, if we go to the farmer's market, you know, all 15 of those dollars are going into the pocket of that farmer who is then, you know, he's
going to grow more papayas.
He's going to grow more papayas, but he's also paying, you know, his land tax to the county or his rent. He's also, you know, he's going to go to Colmore Farms and spend, you know, $4 on
get more fertilizer.
Exactly. But the multiplier effect goes Colmore Farms now takes his, you know, $4, you know, and they're going to pay their employees for that. They're paying more county taxes for whatever they're, you know, like.
So the money is actually staying on the island and recirculating and recirculating.
Yeah, exactly. So they say, you know, if you $1 spent at a local business is the equivalent of $7 in the local economy. You know, so I think we just need to focus on keeping our money, you know, on island.
What happens to the $15 that goes to Safeway?
So, you know, if you go to Safeway, maybe.
Not to pick on Safeway. Yeah, could be Costco.
Any grocery store. You know, and I, you know, I go to the grocery store once a week. I'm not saying we can live without the grocery stores, but I'm just saying, you know, if we spend $15 on papayas at the grocery store, maybe $4 go to the farmer who grew them. You know, there's money that is going to go to the wages of the people in the store. But the main thing is that the profit, say you take $5 from that, is immediately going overseas. Right. So anytime we spend.
Because Safeway. Not to pick on Safeway, but they're a California-based chain, and their goal is to make money, to accumulate resources, profit, and ship them back to headquarters.
Yeah, so it's inevitable. Anytime we support a business that isn't owned locally, we're taking a large, all the profit is leaving our local economy forever.
It's like hemorrhaging money.
Exactly. So you know, and it's just another example of how these are all sort of linked. You know, support your farmers market, you're supporting local agriculture, and you're supporting the local economy. So I think another one quick way that, you know, the county should be addressing this is, you know, we have the lowest property taxes in the nation. You know,
we're number one.
We're number one again.
Awesome.
Yet we look around, you know, we have, you know, if we walk along the beach in the North Shore, you know, there's a lot of amazing houses out there. You know, a lot of them are either TVRs or second homes, you know, and we need to figure out a more equitable rate structure for property taxes that can lower property taxes for our lowest income individuals or people, you know, lower end homes while raising them these higher end homes and TVRs or bed and breakfasts.
Well, one thing about the property taxes here is in Hawaii, we don't pay for the schools through property taxes. Most of the mainland, you know, municipalities and counties, everybody pay for their schools out of that. So ours comes out of the GE tax. And so we can have lower property taxes and fund the county government, mm-hmm. you know, without starving them because we don't have to pay for schools out of that.
But yeah, no, definitely. But I think apart, you know, the reason it would be sort of a revenue neutral thing. The point of raising the property tax on high end homes is to lower property taxes on lower end homes, you know, because right now you can buy a second home. You can go there 2 weeks a year and you're not paying, you know, relatively that much in property taxes. So you're not supporting the county really with this home that's in
there. No, but you are jacking up the value of your neighbor's house, yeah. So their taxes go up even if they have to live there all year long.
Yeah. So, you know, and I don't have the answer for it. I just feel like it's something that we need to address.
Addressing inequality. I think there's probably lots of ways to attack that.
Yeah. You know, I one more sort of county thing, and this comes under food sort of too, you know, is in our ag dedication laws right now. You know, the ag dedication clearly says, you know, ag dedication is a subsidy, a property tax subsidy for if you're doing agricultural activities on land, you don't have to pay property tax or pay very little property tax. You know, so right now it says that you have to raise, harvest, and sell those crops on island in order to, you know,
raise,
qualify.
Harvest, and sell.
So it's, you know, basically the intent of it is to promote local farming, which it should be doing. Yet.
What about biotech corn?
I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, we have so much land in biotech, and I really support sort of I think we need a thriving biotech industry here.
But they're not, it's not food.
But exactly, it shouldn't be done at the expense of local farmers or revenue to the county. You know, so if we can make a more equitable rate structure there, the intent of the ag dedication should be for local food. You know, and it's clearly not being sold on Kauai, so it's clearly not complying with the.
But they're getting the tax break anyway.
Yeah, you know.
So what's up with that?
And I, you know, it's part of 4 years ago, Kauai had a $57 million surplus, you know, and now we're dealing with a $4 million budget shortfall. So,
Not so good. Wow, that's a lot to talk about. And guess what? A whole hour just went by, and we only touched upon the surface of this stuff. Why don't you tell people about your blog? Because that's a way that people can get a hold of you and find out more about what your ideas are, and the conversation can continue.
Yeah, I have a blog which gets somewhat personal sometimes, but it is kawaihawaii.blogspot.com, K-A-W-A-E, hawaii.blogspot.com.
Can I just
Kauai,
do like a Google?
Hawaii or Kauai?
Hawaii.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you just do a Google search on Luke Evslin, will that get you there?
Yeah, I might get there somewhere, but I've sort of set it to not really show up too much. But yeah, you could find it on.
That's a clever communication technique.
Well, I like to write and pretend that nobody's reading. So. But
like dancing when nobody's watching.
They're singing in the shower.
Well, I'm hoping that that we can continue this conversation. And because there's a lot to talk about, there's a lot of solutions and a lot of mana'o, a lot of wisdom, a lot of perspectives. And the more people get involved in this conversation, the more that the realization kind of spreads. And it seems like from a philosophical perspective, that's what we need more of, is more people to like plug in, pay attention, and start looking for solutions.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think these issues are really complex. There's no easy answers, you know, and I have a lot of respect for everybody in government who's working hard to solve all these. You know, if you sit through a county council meeting, these people are really working on the issues. But I just feel like there has to be my main, you know, listen to what science is telling us. They're telling us we have to change our direction, you know, so it's like steering the Titanic. You know, it comes in slow increments, and we all got to be engaged in getting this thing to turn.
Is there maybe a different boat you could select for your analogy. Metaphor.
Yeah. Because, that may be correct, actually.
Because the Titanic, I think, didn't turn out so well. Yeah. They probably tried steering it a little bit, but last time I checked, it's like 20,000 feet below the sea.
Well, maybe that's a lesson for what could possibly happen.
Let's try to avoid that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming in. I wish we had more time, but you've got to go paddle, so that's even better than talking on the radio.
Yeah, that is. Hopefully it'll be fun. It's a beautiful day. Well, thank you guys for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
What are you going to focus on today, paddle-wise?
I can't
go
say.
Fast.
It's windy, so we'll stay in the river. We actually got a race on Saturday, so it'll be more setting up race crews.
All right, well, good luck with that.
Yeah, thank you guys very much.
Yeah, thanks for coming to visit.
Okay.
All right, aloha. Okay, well, it's 5 o'clock, and you're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, and... What is it? K284AL Haleiwa. And we got an hour left in the show, and this program is brought to you by the following underwriters. Check them out.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama Aina, Hawaii Life Style. The National Tropical Botanical Garden presents the Musical Legends in the Garden Concert Saturday, April 5th at NTBG's South Shore Visitor Center in Poipu, featuring 13-time Grammy winner Jerry Douglas on the dobro, plus Hawaiian legends Ledward Ka'apana and Mike Ka'ava, a trio of Nathan Aviao, Jeff Peterson, and Benny Chong, and local favorites Ken Emerson, Pancho Graham, and Kirby Keough. The concert celebrates the 50th anniversary of the nonprofit National Tropical Botanical Garden. More information and tickets available online at ntbg.org and ticket
announcing
outlets,
a slack key guitar performance by Kauai's own Pancho Graham and Keiki Lani Lindsay from the Big Island. Saturday, April 12th at the Kilauea Theater. They will be joined by many other popular local musicians celebrating this dual CD release concert by Pancho and Keiki Lani. Doors open at 7, show starts at 7:30. Tickets at Hawaiian Music Store kiosks in the Coconut Marketplace and Princeville Center, Kauai Music and Sound in Kapa'a, and the Bistro in Kilauea Town. That's Pancho Graham and Keiki Lani Lindsay in concert Saturday, April 12th, 7 p.m. at the Kilauea Theater, sponsored by Kaku Productions, Tiki Time Productions, and Fat Tuesday Records.
KKCR, Hale, KAQA, Kilauea, K284AL, Haleiwa.
Thank you, Dean.
Okay, well,
We got a couple of calls lined up. I think we're going to go to the phones in just a minute there. Jonathan, you say you have an announcement to make?
Yeah, I wanted to let people know about voter registration because we have elections coming up. Going to be primary, and then there's going to be the general election. The voter registration is still open. Candidate deadlines have passed. So I don't know if you wanted to be a candidate for anything, Dave, but it's not going to happen this time because you missed the deadline. It was the 28th of this last month. So, but you can still register to vote. You have until July 10th to register for the primary to be involved in that. And you can get more information at hawaii.gov/elections. And what's the other thing I was going to say? Oh, yeah. Make sure you look up permanent absentee voting. That's the super most groovy way to do it because you get to vote early and you get to vote at home.
And often.
I don't know if you can vote often. I think it's still only once.
Oh, darn.
But you can do it at your own leisure and at your own place of choosing. So you can sit down at your kitchen table and you can look. You can put all your information out. You can look at the different candidates. You can do your research, which is different from when you go into the booth. You get that little drape you put behind you. There's nowhere to put your paperwork.
Yeah, you're allowed to bring in cheat sheets when you go to the voting place.
You can have like a piece of crumpled up paper in your pocket, but it's not very convenient.
Yeah, right.
You need a place to spread out and you know lay your facts out. So yeah, you can go online, hawaii.gov/elections, and you have till July 10th. The other thing is, when the polls open. They need to have workers staffing the polls. So there's a poll working opportunity coming up for you. If you're interested to be one of those folks who help people get their name, find their name, find what precinct they're in, get the right ballot and all that stuff, you can call Nina at 332-9430 and she'll hook you up. There's a workshop you have to take, which you know informs you and tells you everything you know. Kind of a poll working education, lets you know all the things you should do and all the things you should not do, and it even pays. So that's worth checking out. It's Nina is her name, and 332-9430 is the number to call if you want more information about that. So I have one more announcement, but I can wait until a little later in the show. Got some folks who've been waiting patiently on the line. Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Thank you. Aloha. I'd like to know just exactly how burning fires and ethanol and biodiesel is sustainable. And
so you're talking about the biomass plant here.
Yeah, biomass, but also someone has said something about biotech. You're talking about GMOs, right? Because
No.
So what are you talking about then?
Burning albizia.
Luke was saying he's in support of certain biotech options.
In other words, burning GMO corn to create ethanol. First of all, it's not even worth the inputs and the destruction to the environment. It's like using the tar sands to make oil.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he meant growing biotech corn to make ethanol from. I don't know if that's specifically what he meant. But he did say...
He talks about income equality. Biotech is not the answer, and it is definitely not the solution. You've got these big, giant, multi-million dollar chemical companies that are spraying people half to death, okay?
I think
so
you raised...
That's not addressing income inequality. And then also you're talking about this guy called in and said, oh, well, instead of watching TV, let's all sit around and, you know, have a fire. Well, if everybody did that and lived on the island, instead of watching TV, we wouldn't be able to breathe. Smoke actually does kill, and especially now where there's so many people. I can understand if maybe there was just a few tribes or whatever. There would be no impact to people's health and their lungs. But burning wood to boil water, to make steam, to spin a turbine, to create energy is archaic. And it is probably one of the worst ways. You might as well just, you know, have a coal plant or, you know, you get gas and frack deep into the earth's crust. their tidal turbine energy. Nobody said anything about that. And he's done everything to put down solar power, which is probably the best option, and especially if we invest in the batteries. And you won't have that demand issue, the demand side versus the supply side issue. And if you want to address income inequality, you know, make all of these big multi-billion-dollar companies and these mansions get solar panels, because they waste a lot. That's all I have to say. I think that your program is, it's like sponsored by Hawaii Life Realty, which is all about bringing more people in. That's not sustainable. And this guy, Luke Esplin, I think the fact that he's pro-biotech and he's pro-burning wood and cutting down trees just makes me wonder what the show's about. And that's all I have to say.
Well, caller, don't go away. Don't go away, because you have raised some excellent points.
Can I ask you or make a point here, caller? Well, I guess she's not interested in discussing it.
Well, that's too bad, because she had a lot of really good things to say.
Right, yeah. Well, one thing that I want to say about burning wood as a means of making electricity is when you grow a tree, you're taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
Sure, carbon sink.
And then you burn it, you release it again.
Mm-hmm.
But you haven't released any carbon dioxide that wasn't there already a couple of years ago. Okay, so
you're not extracting carbon out of the ground from the coal.
So it's carbon neutral in that respect, in terms of the amount of carbon dioxide that's in the atmosphere. When you take coal and oil that's been in the ground for millions of years, and then throwing that up in the atmosphere, of course, you're building up more CO2.
Yeah, because you're releasing millions of years of stored carbon.
Right. You know, by burning it, you're creating gases that are being released. You know, there's other effects of that.
Sure.
But
highly acidic, too.
But in terms of the I don't know how it is compared to burning coal, how much, you know, acids are created.
Well, no, but I was saying in coal. Coal is highly acidic.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Unless, of course, you're burning clean coal. That fictitious stuff.
Yeah, the stuff
that doesn't exist.
Fairy tales kind of thing. You know?
That doesn't exist.
But just in terms of the carbon issue, I think burning biomass is somewhat. Now, we used to make 50% of our electricity from biomass on this island, because we had all that biomass.
Yeah, the bagasse.
The gas from the sugarcane. So that was material that was already here that they were going to toss out anyway.
We were generating 50% of our consumption back then is because our consumption was fantastically less.
Right, yeah.
So, but nevertheless, the caller, and it's a shame she went away so fast, she raised some excellent points. You know, I'm not sure if I agree with all of the solutions that Luke proposed. However, it's not so much about right and wrong and agreeing. It's agreeing to listen and sharing perspectives. I really appreciate the caller who just called in and shared her perspective.
Yeah, I wish Luke was here. He could describe why, you know, or what he meant by that statement about the biotech and where he thought it fits into the mix.
I think she raised some good points about inequality, for sure.
Okay, we got another caller.
Aloha, caller. You're on there. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Hey, how's it? How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Well, I'm doing all right. And, you know, I was listening to you guys. I didn't catch all of the bot earlier because I was in and out of some errands I was doing. But, you know, I listened to most of it, and then I heard Sister Jismel grumbling. But, you know, I just wanted to point out that, you know, as far as this energy thing, nobody dislikes our electric company more than me.
Oh, yeah? You're number one?
Probably.
Okay. I bow in your honor, sir.
Here's how I know. Because I was a young teenager that actually paid my mother's electric bill when they converted to a co-op. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm going to get money back. So I probably trumped you as a member. I know for a fact that you probably wasn't around living here paying on bill in your name back then. So I don't like them. But that's a different argument, and that gets us off the point.
But don't interrupt yourself.
The point that I want to bring up is that Hawaii is eroding. And the only reason we don't have, you guys are talking about a dam in Wailua. The only reason they put a dam in Wailua, or even would mention that, is because they dropped the ball and didn't get property rights to the mainstreams off the bat, except maybe one third of them. and they don't, and they're, as a corporation, they're trying to, if we can't control it, nobody will. Let's prolong it and make this a taboo energy source. We have natural gravity-fed streams all over this island. We get torrential floods. When I was a kid, we had all the flumes existing. Okay? They flowed. Every one of those intersections could have a little turbine working off our flumes. We don't even have to pedal a bike like Third World. Are you listening?
Oh, yeah, no, straight up.
It's ridiculous, but we're eroding, right? If we don't get our waterways back, okay, if we as a county don't get serious about reinstating the flumes, forget about it. Forget about it.
So you're talking about restoring some of the infrastructure.
Yes, you need to restore the infrastructure for multiple reasons. It can be a jobs program.
Uh-huh.
It can be a historical program.
Uh-huh.
It can be a freaking restoration and reversal of our erosion process that is occurring as we speak, as we see every day. I am from Kapahi. My auntie Gay's lost it. I was born and raised in, had a ditch in the front yard parallel to Ka'apuni Road. That is the road from Kapahi Park that goes down to the middle school, that goes down to the roundabout. Every flood you guys get now, that bottom is just nuts. Why? The water jumps onto the road. There's no avenue for it to escape. The whole Koloko Dam issue was because he didn't maintain his flume.
Yeah, he didn't keep the infrastructure.
Yeah, let me finish. Because even back in Anaola, when Barakalal Mohamed Maki, she was a victim of non-taking care of the flumes. It's going to come back to bite us, and it's an opportunity to not jump into our Mambo'e Ale'ale, which is special to me.
You're talking about that horizontal drilling project.
This is all connected, brother. You got to talk about it all as one. If not, you don't have the real solution. Okay? The real deal is that the farmers could use the water if we reestablish better modern freaking reservoirs connected to these flumes that we reestablished that are already existing, mapped out.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, let me tell you, as a kid that grew up with these rivers and these flumes, every little intersection where the water's turned, burned, all of those could be all retrofitted all the way, boom, with everyone, small little turbines all the way.
So generate power as well as feed the collar.
Why not? Give me for a damn and freaking. Well, you know, the only reason they're doing that is because I know that they were dropped the ball. The guys who went and proposed this whole hydro thing, they already had the rights to some of the main rivers. Can't you see them like that? So they cock-blocked them. Sorry I have to say that, but that's what they did. That's a chicken, I should say that. All right, but that's what they did. They blocked them.
Huh.
And that's why we're suffering as a public. Because they are a corporate entity that if we don't go and amend the Constitution to define we the people, because this is all about, if you don't talk about everything one time, I love all you guys' stories, but they're all fractional.
Yeah, how do we get past that?
You need to show them all together, bro. I teach my daughter, they teach all the neighborhood kids. There's another generation coming up. Be worried. I get them already. Don't worry.
Well, that sounds like you're probably doing the right thing then.
If you don't think about it like this, it ain't gonna get done. Right? How many old timers, how many hunters need work?
Probably lots.
Lots. They could go and hand clean the ditch. It's the way it was done anyway.
So.
We're eroding. We're the second fastest eroding spot on the planet. You guys witness this every time we get big rains. I don't even gotta tell you guys. It's all the way well.
Sure. And it's been wet recently, too. The ground is all saturated.
Yeah, and if you guys don't do something as a community now, that's going to be our major problem. Not to mention the world is water anyway. So we got to take that excuse that, there's no water for the farmers out of the equation. But that's their excuse for tapping into Ale'ale.
Yeah, that doesn't seem...
You know, once they put that pipe in there, $20 a gallon overseas, whatever it is.
Yeah, well, and plus draining the water stored in the island, you know, that's going to hurt the stream flow all in every direction.
Yeah, well, you know, I like the sister's energy, but, you know, she didn't really come up with a plan for herself. You know, I agree with burning biofuels as, you know, the tree idea is ridiculous. And I'll tell you guys why. because they, all he wanted to do was harvest and then introduce a lot of foreign species and they belong here. Compound that with the incineraries are south of the islands. So when the polar shifts, we're not only going to get vog, because we get bad vog. Everybody knows the vog problem, right?
Sure.
So now you guys compound that with the flumes coming from down there. Not a good picture.
From the smokestacks, you mean?
Because they're south of us.
Yeah.
So then you're saying the particulates in the air will come back in.
It's only coming. This is my 7-year-old can do the math. When the corner winds switch and the vog hits us, that's how come we get our vog, because it blows the wind from the south. The flume that those incineraries for the trees, that's on the south. It's going to blow back with the vog.
Yeah, come right to Louis.
Well, I want to thank you, caller, for calling in and sharing your perspective with folks, because, you know, everybody's got something to say, and there's a lot of wisdom out there, and I appreciate you sharing yours with us.
Yeah, okay, right on. I got to go, too. My wife and my kids probably want to know what happened. I was right behind them.
All right, aloha.
Okay, bye-bye.
Get another caller. Thank you for standing by. Aloha, you're on Out of the Box.
Hello?
Aloha, you're live on the air.
Yeah, okay. She had a great, great, great talk. But, you know, living up on Wailua's Dream, it's very annoying that, number one, people throw stuff in there as though it's a garbage disposal.
That's no good.
But, okay, that's my first point. And the next point is up here, and no, millionaires do not live up here. You know, it's some do.
What part of the island are you talking about?
Wailua?
Wailua Homestead.
Oh, okay.
You know, I live in a very, very wonderful local neighborhood. And the thing is, we really, really stick together. And the thing is that, you know, I grew up on a sailboat. So, okay, so every morning I put out my jugs, water, whatever.
To catch water?
I can wash off in the evening, because I was gone for 3 weeks, unfortunately, for a family problem. And the person that stayed here ran up a $133 electric bill.
Wow. What is your electric bill normally?
Like, it's still it's incredible, because I don't leave my hot water heater on. It's usually $70 to $100.
So, like, doubled.
Yeah. And the thing is, the other thing that I do that people might consider is I don't have my washing machine plugged into my septic tank. I have it so that I could rinse off, because I don't use...
use a good soap.
But, yeah. And it really helps to keep down the mosquitoes, whatever. But when it comes time for rinse time, you put it out and you just let it, you know, fly all over the place.
Gray water,
so
yeah.
So why put that into your septic system?
Yeah, no need.
You know, those are just some little tips. And the other tip that I have, you know, it's like, you know, just it just amazes me. Amazes me that, you know, living on a boat, I never spent money on electricity. And the other thing I've bought are three little shower things that you go on a boat with. I don't want to say the manufacturer's name. And when it's raining at night really hard, I go out and wash my hair.
That's one way to do it.
Because it's the best water you can possibly get. And then I have my bags that are hanging here with warm water from the daytime and rinse it off.
Well, those are ways we can diminish our footprint and live lightly on the land.
But meanwhile, I must say I'm a professional, and I have to show up in professional clothes, and that, you know, I will not say who I am, but you know what? You can do it.
Well, thank you, caller. Really appreciate you calling in and sharing some of your experience. That's great.
Yeah, and the thing is that it's all so enlightening in the morning when you get up and you do that and boom.
Well, thank you for calling in. We're going to go to the next caller, but appreciate you calling in to Out of the Box.
Okay, thank you so much.
Aloha. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for waiting.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for your show. I love your show. I only caught part of it today, but I just was thinking of another tip. I'm another lady with a tip right now. And I've actually been doing this for years. If you're driving every day like I am, it's really easy when you get home to plug an inverter into your car battery and run your lights and your movie or whatever you're going to do off your car. And you could actually have double battery in your car, be running your car on the car battery, switch it over. I mean, be charging both when you're driving, switch it over when you get home, and just be, you know, using an auxiliary battery.
Hmm, that's pretty clever.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that. So that you can keep two batteries fully charged while you're driving around?
Yeah, you can. And I used to do this when I had a Volkswagen. It was especially easy because the battery is under the passenger seat. So you could have an extra battery behind that. In another kind of car, you would have to wire it from under the hood to the trunk or whatever. You could have a bunch of batteries, and you could be charging all of them at the same time when you're driving. And then when you get home, you flip the switch so you're not draining your car battery.
Right, so you can start in the morning.
Yeah, so you can start in the morning, because that's one thing that that often happens.
I've done that before. Yeah. I've drained it all the way out.
Yeah,
make a choice
happens.
With watch the end of the movie or be able to start it in the morning.
Right, and the movies usually win.
Yeah. Well, that's
instant gratification.
Yeah. All of us were driving all day, every day, and I don't understand why we're not utilizing it, you know, to a fuller degree.
That's a really good idea. We've got power to burn, and we're throwing it away.
Well,
yeah,
one thing we need, though, is much better battery technology. The batteries we're using, you know, the lead-acid ones, are not very efficient, and they're kind of environmentally destructive in some ways.
Well,
you know,
and they're disposable.
Right.
Well, yeah, consumable.
So, yeah. They only last a few years.
Yeah, that's
three
no good.
Years, so like with 300
yeah.
charges, like that, 1,000
exactly.
charges.
Exactly. It's kind of pathetic, and people talk about how, you know, sustainable solar is, but it's really not. The batteries are toxic. And with all of our brains together, we should be able to come up with something a little bit better than nuclear power and all this, you know.
What do you got against nuclear power?
Oh, oh, you know, just a little bit of toxic waste in the ocean. No big deal.
Yeah, that's kind of a problem.
And, of course, don't forget blowing up mountains to get to the uranium ore.
We should be able to do better.
Yeah, breaking up atoms to boil water.
You know, I like nuclear power in the sun, 93 million miles away,
yeah.
where it's safe.
Well, I really appreciate you guys. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much, caller.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you. Bye.
And we've got another caller. Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box. Did you have a question or a comment?
Hello, is this Kong Radio?
I don't think so.
That's good. You know, I'm here in Hawaii spending my children's inheritance.
Awesome.
And one way I save water is I shower with a friend.
There you go. Plus, you make more friends like that.
Yeah, right. Or enemies, one or the other. But my dog is a true blue friend, so we shower together. Anyways, thanks for the show. It's interesting. I love all the talk, the speakers. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, we were talking a moment ago about batteries, how they're toxic and consumable and don't last very long and you got to throw them away. I think we've got an interview scheduled with a PV installer guy who can talk about some energy independence on the island. And one of the questions I'm going to ask him is about these nickel iron batteries. Nickel iron batteries. It's N-I-F-E. F-E is the symbol for iron. So the batteries are called knife batteries, and evidently they have a super long life, and not so toxic. So I'm pretty excited to hear more about these new batteries.
Yeah.
Actually, they're not that new. Thomas Edison, I guess, like most of his inventions, stole it from somebody else and then claimed it was his. But there are still batteries today, 100 years old, that are still functioning, of these nickel-iron batteries. So
oh, wow.
I'm kind of stoked to find out more about that.
Well, we have another caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, that's you.
Thank you so much for calling in.
I was just calling back to say someone called me and said, well, you know what, leaving bottles of water out to get warm for bathing or whatever you have. But living on a boat for so very long, you can just put a couple drops of some kind of, well, we used Clorox in the old days.
Bleach?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just chlorine, yeah.
Well, yeah, just chlorine, and just to get rid of the bacteria.
Oh, I see, to sterilize
it.
We were
down in the Caribbean, and down in, Panama Canal, it's just to sterilize it. So people called me and said, well, what are you talking about? You know, what about all that bacteria that grows in those bottles? But I use glass bottles, and, I wash my dishes. At night, I take the thing and I at the bottle and I just wash my dishes in that and put it out to the garden and it fertilizes it.
That's great.
Good thinking.
All right. Well, thanks for calling with that tip.
Yeah. Thank you so much, caller. Aloha.
Okay. Well, we got about a half hour left in the show. Phone lines are open, 826-7771. One thing I heard going on this weekend is there's some sort of action happening down at Rock Quarry.
Oh, yeah. What's that about? I heard about that.
I saw something on Facebook about it, but I don't.
It's like reclaiming the waterfall, or what was that about?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. You know, some people are kind of upset with this developer, Summers, who's building a huge mega project down there by the river mouth.
Well, I mean, isn't that going to be really great for whoever buys it with their millions of dollars?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when he came forward and proposed the project, it was my dream to build a house here, and, I really, want you to give me the chance to fulfill my dream, whatever. And then
what's so wrong with that?
Well, I suspect that, as soon as it's done, it's probably for sale, and it was just an investment to begin with. But anyway, he bought the property all the way along the river, both sides of the river, all the way to the waterfall.
Hmm.
So he owns all the access to the waterfall. But he was supposed to provide public access to the falls because
was that,
the water,
was that
he doesn't
the
own
deal?
The water.
Right.
But he's kind of reneged on that, I think. They're supposed
that
to be
doesn't a, seem fair.
Supposed to be a trail along the water's edge, so you can go up, maybe kayak up the river, walk along the water,
well,
get to the waterfall.
I know that all of the navigable rivers and streams are public access.
Right. Yeah. So the water is, but the land under the water is owned, in most cases. So I don't know exactly what that does to access issues. But then also,
I don't think that those access issues are revocable by property rights.
Right. But then also, there's a line of trees on the beach, on Rock Quarry Beach,
mm-hmm.
that have been disappearing.
Yeah, mysteriously dying.
Yes, dying from being poisoned with diesel fuel and also being cut down. You could see
mm-hmm.
where they've
mm-hmm.
been cut with chainsaws.
Now, who would be wanting to chop these trees down or kill them or whatever?
The trees that are disappearing are in the middle of the line,
uh-huh.
and they line up from the house to the ocean.
Whose viewplane are those trees in?
I don't know who would benefit from that whatsoever. But anyway, if anybody knows about this action going on down in Rock Quarry, please give us a call and let us know what's happening. I think it's Sunday. We do have a couple of calls here.
Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box on KKCR. Thanks for calling in. What have you got to say?
That's not Mr. Summers, the ex-cocaine dealer. we won't mention his first name because that would be possibly unfair.
Well, also, you're just a person saying something about
okay.
someone else, and we have no way to know if that's
right.
true or not. So let's not say things like that.
Right. I've seen a lot of his real estate deals and so forth, and I don't appreciate, the way he goes about it.
Well, this is Charles Summers.
I just want to point out that nobody else seems to have seen it or mentioned it, but I saved it to a reading list in my phone, and I can probably figure out how to send it to you guys.
Sure, let me give you our email address.
I think I know it, DJ at GeekVacy.org.
No, no, that goes to all the DJs. If you want to send an email to us, it's OOTB at KKCR.org. That's OOTB for out of the box.
Okay. Very good. Anyway, it was an article on the front page.
Of what?
Of the Star Advertiser.
Oh, okay.
About climatologists at UH who were predicting that Kingston, Jamaica, I don't know why they picked that particular place, but it's a warm place, and it's a little bit south of us, but not much, latitude-wise, would be 150 degrees on any given day by 2050.
Is that Fahrenheit or centigrade?
Fahrenheit.
That still sounds pretty hot.
That's hot.
It's too hot to live with, right?
Yes.
Your rich people can build domes that are air-conditioned.
Ah, yes, air-conditioned pleasure domes.
The rest of us can't. And we'll be the servants, you know. If we're lucky, we'll get a room in the pleasure dome somewhere in the corner.
Well, somebody's got to shine the shoes and cut the grass.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I did most of my life, just cut the grass.
And we've got another caller standing by. Did you have any other comments that you'd like to close with?
I really think people should think about that. They're talking about a 4-degree centigrade raise being very bad for the Earth. And they're saying, you know, that's what's going to happen because they'll never do anything at any climatology conference. And they never have.
Well, you know, just because we haven't done it yet doesn't mean we can't one day, and that could be tomorrow.
We're 50 years too late.
Well, you know, it's never too late to start doing the right thing.
That's true. However, I think people should consider that fact. What will you or your children who are going to be alive in 2050, that's not very far off, 36 years.
Yeah.
If it is that temperature at that latitude, then it will be hotter towards the equator, places like Bangkok, that are 14 degrees. This was 18, and we're 20 whatever.
Yeah, 22.
22. But that's a frightening thought. If everything dries up, it burns.
So we can expect the same thing here then, I would imagine.
I would expect so, yes.
Well, let that be an incentive to us to begin changing our ways and getting on a better path.
I have done that, yes.
Yeah.
I've gotten rid of all my carbon-burning things in any way except for my propane stove.
Well, I and the world...
burners anyway.
On behalf of the world, I thank you greatly, sir.
Okay, and my bicycle, too, the old one.
Well, thanks for calling.
Well, you consider that. It's really a frightening thought.
Yes, 150 degrees. That's frightening.
Hi.
Hello.
Aloha, Lisa. Caller.
I have information on the Brett Corey event.
Oh, okay, excellent. Great. It's one of our Akamai listeners, Dave.
Okay, yeah. What's up? What's going on then? It's Sunday, right?
It's Sunday at 10 a.m., and it's Sunday at 10 a.m. in Sitrock Quarry, and some of the Kupuna from that area are going to be down there and providing stories of the history of the valley. Because
what
Mr. Summers has said is that there isn't much history of use in the valley.
Well, when people say things like that, what they're really saying is they don't know the history.
So that's right.
And they don't want you to know it either.
They don't want you to know it either. But so they're it, or maybe they're just mistaken, and somebody quickly filling out the papers for them, so this is hard to use. But there's a lot of history up there. So this is like a multi-generational effort.
That's pretty wild.
There will be Kupuna. And then at 12 o'clock, there is going to be stand-up paddling and different efforts going up the river, because what has happened is this playground that's up at the waterfall and this area that people have utilized for generations has been basically cut off. And it happens that the homeowner is here
this weekend, and so there will be respect and everything, but just to be physically demonstrating that we want access up to the waterfall.
So say again when this is going to be.
It's starting at 10 a.m. on Sunday.
And that what day of the month is that?
That would be, I think, April 5th.
Okay.
I have to look on the calendar for that. So this Sunday at 10 a.m., April 6th.
Six, okay.
April 6th. And then 12 o'clock, people are going to start paddling up. It's going to be a fun potluck beach day. Basically asserting our rights to being able to go up the water. But no laws are being broken in Hawaii. They can't actually own the waterways.
Right, that's always public access, just like the beaches.
Mm-hmm. And there is actually an access point right of way that they are required to have there, but it's densely grown. The pathway that has been used for a very long time, they have blocked that. And that was a central piece of their asking to be able to have a very large home right there at the apex. Papahanao Mokuakea, the marine sanctuary. They're right there at the estuary. It's a corner of Papahanao Mokuakea, the largest marine reserve in the world. And they have a giant footprint right on the land at the river mouth, blocking everybody else off. So that's my understanding. I'm not a coordinator of it, but I am going, and I am also looking at their posting on the web, the Facebook posting, looking at that.
Do you have the address for that? Or term people could use to search?
It's called Rock Quarry. You can either go down Wailapa Road on the south side of Kilauea, or if you go down Kilauea Lighthouse Road, Kilauea Road, and turn on the Healy Quarry Road. The challenge is that the beach part of that road is no longer passable. Mr. Summers has an agreement with the county and also to build that big house, that he would keep that road clear all the way down to the beach.
But he hasn't done it.
He hasn't done it, but my understanding is, because this was an issue at Kilauea Neighborhood Association meeting this week, and there was somebody who he had called to be doing the work, once it hits the National Fish and Wildlife Service area, they have been blocked so far by a small landowner called the New Seacliff Subdivision. So that easement has a private ownership underneath it. The county has authority over it. Mr. Summers did actually make an effort to do it, but didn't get through the red tape of the easement area, so it hasn't been all bad.
But there, it sounds like there's some issues that need to be resolved.
What I hope is maybe they just don't even realize. Sometimes these people who have so much wealth, they're never here, and they don't really know. And maybe it'll help to wake them up, and they'll, you know, be willing at least to open up the access, during certain times of the day. They pay for security to keep everybody out. Maybe they could just pay that security to keep everybody safe. Since they say they're worried about liability, well, they can lifeguard, you know, for a few sessions a week, something like that. To me, that seems like a win-win.
Yeah, I'm sure there's solutions to that challenge there.
Yes, and the Open Space Commission on Thursday, April 10th, is doing a field trip down there. And so people can go along with that. So we'll probably be in the Kilauea area around 12. They're going to do Papa'a. They're doing three beaches between, you know, north of Anahola to Kilauea. And the Open Space Commission, people can participate and help to create continued access to the mountains, the beaches, the waterways. We have that commission to help us. But it's a challenge for them. They're trying.
Now, you mentioned three
Felicia, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, you mentioned that they're going to be visiting three access points there, Papa'ame, mm-hmm. Rock Quarry. What was the third?
I believe that is above what's known as Larson Beach. But another Akamai listener could call in further on that, because it's just the three beaches in there. I went on the last field trip. I am going on this one. It's really important to be able to be helping these commissions do their job.
Yeah, well, they need the help. I mean, it's a community help. It's a community responsibility,
and letting them know that there's support in the community, you know, for their efforts,
and that it does matter. I went on the last one, and they are emphasizing three this time. One is right up there at Papa'a. You can't get down there very easily anymore. Surfers can if they're willing to jump off a cliff. You know, for the young and the agile, it works. For anybody outside of that range, it doesn't. So this one here is a big, highly used beach, and it has gotten very, very difficult to use. And you mentioned earlier about the death of those trees.
At Rock Quarry, yeah.
At Rock Quarry, and it was clear that they were being cut, burned, and poisoned. It wasn't that they got a disease. It was very, very evident.
Right.
And documented. So somebody has an intention to kill those trees, and it happens that they are directly in the viewplane of this high-end house. Whether they really did it or not, I don't know. It would take that dune away if those trees all died. The death has slowed down. But if the trees were gone, the ocean could take that whole dune away, and then they would really have a different understanding of their land if they were beachfront, which I can't imagine that they would really want to be.
Well, it's
great, but it's got a lot of downsides, too.
Yeah, it's important to for the trees and the vegetation to maintain the integrity of the dunes and to keep it from blowing or washing away. That's really important.
Yes, so that's some of the stuff that has been at threat with the killing of those areas.
Right. Hey, we have another call.
Okay.
Then.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, caller.
Bye.
Aloha. That's Sunday, April 6th at Rock Quarry. It's going to be a paddle up the stream. And then Thursday, April 10th, the Open Space Commission is going to be looking at some beaches. So I would go online and look up Open Space Commission on Kauai and try and contact them if you want to get involved with that.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Aloha, caller. Are you there? Okay, we're going to go to the next caller.
Hello.
Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Yeah, I plan to go down to Rock Quarry on Sunday. I'm glad you mentioned it. You know, I think it's a mistake to say something that this Mr. What is his name? Sam Saunders?
Charles Summers.
Summers. I think it's a mistake to say that he is just innocently unaware that people are disappointed that they don't have access to that waterfall. I mean, he obviously knew exactly what he was doing, and that was all his plan.
Well, we don't really know what's in his heart. It's hard to say. I haven't looked into his heart.
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I think it's pretty clear what's in his heart, you know. And this is my opinion, just like your opinion's your opinion, you know. I think he's a wheeler dealer, and whoever gave him the permits, the county, they're just as culpable as anybody, too, you know, because that house should have never been built there, in my opinion. And not just the house, to be able to buy all that land, you know. I'm sure it was in his plan. I'm not sure. I bet it was.
You could be right.
I could be right.
Well, my understanding was that he was required to provide access to the waterfall as part of the permit requirements. But then he came back to the county and he said, my insurance agent said it was couldn't get insurance, and so they removed that requirement.
Well, those guys, he's not a dummy. He's probably very smart, and his lawyers are certainly really smart.
You don't know that either, caller.
Yeah, right. I don't know that either. You know, but
but I'm sure they do this all the time in all different places, you know, because that's how it is.
Yeah, there's a certain system and pattern there.
Well, yeah, I mean that's how lawyers, good lawyers, work. They go. It's like cloak and smoke and mirrors, and then we get what we want at the end, you know. And that's almost everything. Anyways, I'm glad Felicia mentioned that. You know, reminded me about it. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you, caller. And we've got another caller standing by. Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Are you there, caller? Evidently, the caller is not there,
Dave.
Nope. Okay. Phone lines are open. 826-7771.
Hey, I found an interesting story on the internet here.
I can tell that you did because I heard the rustling of the paper.
Yeah, the paper's out. There was a girl in Alberta, Canada, who was looking for an idea for a science project. So she decided she was going to test the food, the fish, and seaweed at her local stores there and see if there's any radioactivity from Fukushima.
Okay.
So her dad bought her a little
Geiger counter. Awesome.
And she went to the store and bought a bunch of seaweeds and foods, you know, seafood.
And this imported from Japan, I'm taking it.
Well, she's in Alberta, which is inland.
Okay.
So it would be imported from somewhere or another. Could be probably out of the Pacific, I would imagine. But so this, she said she found very significant levels of radioactivity in a lot of these products, in kelp particularly, where she found 1,400. The limit is 1,400 counts over a 10-minute period. She found up to 1,700 or 1,800 in several samples right out of the stores. Also, the fish had quite a bit of radioactivity in it as well. And another thing she reported was that the Health Canada decided to stop testing seafood after a year of after Fukushima. They were testing seafood
up to a year,
and then they said we didn't find any, so they stopped testing.
Now that is some funny stuff.
Although some scientists were saying it would take 3 years for currents and the movement of water to bring that radioactivity to the west coast of North America. So she did the testing herself and found pretty high levels of radioactivity in it. And so, you know, my question is, why isn't, you know, the U.S. government testing ours, because they're not? Why isn't Canada testing their seafood and now make sure that they are healthy to eat and safe to eat? But then also, I forget my second point there. Anyway,
well, I'm concerned to hear that a little Canadian girl has a Geiger counter. I don't know if I think that's okay.
Yeah. The second point is, what does this mean for our food supply here on Kauai?
That's actually a better question.
If they're getting it on the northwest, you know, the northeast part of the Pacific.
Right.
What is it doing to the seafood in our area as well? And so, and I don't think the Department of Health is out there testing the seafood. I've never heard of anybody doing that. So
that's a good question, Dave.
Okay. We have another caller. Probably just have time for one more here. Then we got to move on to Acoustic Luau. Looks like we've got a guest DJ in today.
So. Awesome.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Well, hello. I would like to speak about the waterfall issue that you were talking about, access to the waterfall.
Okay, we just have a couple of minutes, so go for it.
Okay. Well, I think we have a wonderful citizen in our community, Bill Porter, who has allowed everyone to go onto his property and visit the beautiful old dam at the end of Quavo Road.
And that's incredible. I was there several weeks ago, and it's like a fairyland down there.
It's gorgeous. And there's no issue of liability. You sign a waiver, and you're allowed to go and swim, and it's been very peaceful and a wonderful addition to the community. And I'm sure that Mr. Summers, if he had the right feeling in his heart, would be able to extend his waterfall to the population as well.
His waterfall?
Yeah. Amazing, isn't it? Two people own a waterfall.
Should be
illegal.
That doesn't seem... Doesn't seem possible, actually, because the water can't be owned by anybody.
Well, you tell him that.
So I'll see all of the people down there next Sunday. I think it's very exciting, and I'm glad that Fern is taking the initiative and getting people together to make a peaceful protest and let this guy know how the community feels.
Yeah, it's exciting, too, to hear that it's going to be multi-generational. That's it's one of the first times I've heard it. That seems like a wonderful way to go.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, guys. Well, good show. Right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Well, she was quick, so I'm going to squeeze in one more call here. Caller, you're on the air. If you could be really quick with your comments at the end of the show.
Yeah, because then I'll have time to read my haiku.
Got it. Seems to me that I heard not too long ago on KKCR someone from the Surfrider Foundation that is actually checking radiation in fish.
Oh, really?
Along our coast. So... at that time that I heard it, they said there wasn't any significant amount, but if someone from the Surfrider Foundation can be interviewed, or that would, help.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting. Maybe we'll try to track that down.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Aloha.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
So real quick, I just wanted to announce, this is breaking news, that Kauai Rising, have you heard of them?
Yes.
They are working on a petition. And I guess they finally got it finalized, and they are now beginning to gather signatures to get it on the ballot this November.
And what is the nature of this petition?
It has to do with the rights of the land. And I think specifically it's going to be dealing with property owners demonstrating the safety of the practices that they're using for agricultural chemicals.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Putting the onus on them to prove that it's safe so that they can continue rather than the other way around. So that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they word that, because there have been some countries that have given nature rights by law.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're proposing a new project or something like that, you have to take into account the rights of nature to do its thing.
Not just property rights?
No, but
not just human rights.
The nature, the natural processes that might be affected by that project. So
It sounds to me like if you're including more rights into the equation, that it's probably rightier.
It's a good thing, yeah. Okay, well, time to move on here. We got a great show coming up, Acoustic Luau, for the next 2 hours, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. And Jimmy Trujillo will be here next week for Out of the Box. Aloha. Thanks for all the calls. And thanks to our guest, Luke Ebslin.
And thanks to all the callers, you who called in. And thanks to everybody who helps make KKCR work. It's really great. I want to go out with this haiku.
Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Bird songs surround me. Wind rustles guava thicket. Distant clouds sheet rain.
Wow, that's nice. Okay, here's something from Graham Nash, Simple Man.
Ahoy ho.
Aloha.